This is KUNM. I'm Chris Boros. Now it's time for the debate between District 2 congressional candidates Steve Pierce, the Republican incumbent, and his challenger attorney Roxanne Rocky Lara. The debate was taped at KRWG Public Radio in Las Cruces. Then on October 30th at 7 p.m., we'll bring you a debate hosted by KENW between District 3 congressional candidates, incumbent Democrat Ben Ray Lujan, and his Republican challenger Jeff Byrd. We're streaming live online at KUNM.org.
Presenting the Congressional District 2 debate between Republican Steve Pierce and Democrat Roxanne Rocky Lara. Brought to you by public media partners from across New Mexico and moderated by veteran journalist Sam Donaldson in the KRWG studios in Las Cruces.
Thank you for joining us for this election 2014 debate. I'm Sam Donaldson, and we welcome Republican Representative Steve Pierce and his Democratic challenger, Rocky Lara. They'll have 60 seconds to answer each question, followed by a 30-second rebuttal. We'll also have some questions with 10-second answers and brief rebuttals. We begin with the opening statements. Steve Pierce drew the long straw and elected to go first. Congressman, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Sam, and I appreciate your participation in this debate tonight. I look forward to this opportunity to serve my answers to the American people. I appreciate the 2nd District for having elected me before, and I'm here to ask for your support to go back and continue the fight for New Mexico families. One of the important things that we have right now in the entire country is a sense of dismay, a sense of concern that maybe it's too late to save this country. Always I say that no, the country is going to be determined. Its future will be determined by our grit, our passion, our love for those things that we share in common across party aisles. That's the love for liberty, freedom, love for fairness, that we treat everyone the same, and the ability to care for those who might slip through the cracks. Those are the things that are universal to America. Again, I thank my opponent, Roxanne Lara, for her willingness to run. It's a big state. This is a very noble calling, but it's a very difficult calling. So again, I'm here to earn your support tonight, and thank you for watching.
Thank you, Congressman Pierce. And Ms. Lara.
Thank you. Thank you, KRWG. Thank you, Sam Donaldson, for moderating today. And thank you, Congressman Pierce, for joining me in this discussion. As I travel across the district, I see the same things everywhere I go. People are fed up with Congress. The dysfunction and partisanship in Washington is leaving Southern New Mexico in its wake. We can fix Congress together, but we have to take our values to Washington. I'll fight to protect Medicare and Social Security. I'll fight to cut wasteful government spending and balance the budget. And I will fight to invest in small businesses right here in Southern New Mexico so we can grow and create jobs and strengthen our economy. I'm so proud to be here on my old stomping grounds at NMSU's Milton Hall, and I look forward to outlining my vision for Southern New Mexico.
Ms. Lara, thank you. Let's begin with the first question that I think a lot of people think is number one, jobs, the economy. The good news for the country is that the unemployment rate has fallen to about 5.9%, but New Mexico's rate is at least almost 0.8%, maybe higher, in this state. And all the data shows that we rank near the bottom. Now, Mr. Pierce, if you return to Congress, what will you do to help New Mexico specifically?
Well, Sam, we're going to continue doing the same things that we've been doing. Number one, the president has assessed correctly that the corporate tax rates, the business tax rates, are too high in America, makes us uncompetitive, lets jobs go overseas. I sent him a letter the day after he made that comment in the State of the Union message. I will work with you across state lines, party lines. I will work with you across any lines that exist because I believe you're correct. The second thing we need is regulatory reform. The third thing that I've recently done is bring the incoming head of armed services, if we retain the majority, into New Mexico, spent 2 days looking at the bases here, looking at the military assets, what New Mexico provides to the nation. With that understanding, he left saying that these places are irreplaceable. Well, that's an important understanding. We've worked to get the WIP site back open, but one of the main things we did is take jobs from the eastern side of the state over to the west side where jobs are not as plentiful, and we've had job and hiring fairs. One time hired 57 people in the Sunland Park area to go work on the east side of the state. We'll continue those hands-on efforts.
Ms. Lara, same question for you. Jobs for New Mexico, 60 seconds.
Absolutely. As we look across the district, we've got places like southeastern New Mexico that has very low unemployment rates. But then you go across to places like Luna County, where the unemployment rate is nearing 15%. And that's unacceptable for southern New Mexico. We absolutely have to find ways to create opportunities right here at home. I was lucky in being able to come back from school to my community and have a career. But not all the kids in New Mexico are able to do that today. So some of the things that I think we should do is close those corporate tax loopholes that are given to corporations that are shipping our jobs overseas. Take those investments, put them right here in southern New Mexico's small businesses to have those opportunities for them. And look at private-public partnerships and collaborative efforts for training and industry to make sure that we're training people for the jobs that are available and helping to create jobs for our people that are here in southern New Mexico.
Mr. Pierce, close corporate tax loopholes, rebuttal, 30 seconds.
When I asked my friends, the Democrats in Congress, exactly what they mean, generally they give me accounting write-offs. Those are legitimate write-offs that make us more competitive in the world. I agree completely that we shouldn't be helping pay for skyboxes at sporting events, but I will tell you, the biggest problem we have in this country with jobs is the tax rate that makes us uncompetitive worldwide, and the president has said he would address it. I wish that he would respond because I would work with him to do that.
Ms. Lara, rebuttals, 30 seconds.
Absolutely. I find it very interesting that Congressman Pierce continues to talk about approaching this issue in a bipartisan manner and painting himself as a moderate when he votes 92% of the time with the Tea Party and is not a moderate. He's been in Congress for over 10 years, and yet New Mexico is still at the bottom of the pile when it comes to jobs and the economy. Where are these things that he talks about now, and why hasn't he done them in the past?
Let's keep this going. Go ahead, Congressman.
Yeah, sure. One of the things that any party official will do, or any party serving, is going to vote 90% of the time with leadership because many of the bills are simply non-controversial. I probably have been one of the more independent voices in Washington. In fact, was recognized nationally by the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, saying this guy goes out and works across the aisle more than anybody. He might should be the example for the rest of the Republican Party. So I find my challenger's comments to be untrue at best.
Do you get to read all those bills? You personally read them?
You read the bills, and some of them you study. I will tell you the truth on the bills that have to do with naming of post offices. We very rarely read those and discuss them, but many times the opportunity to look at the bill, it requires much more than just a simple reading because they refer to other statutes. You have to go back into other statutes and see what's changing there. It's a very complex process when you get these 1,000-page bills.
Ms. Lara, rebuttal to what the congressman had said earlier?
Absolutely. Let me tell you what doesn't create jobs for southern New Mexico. Shutting down the government like Congressman Pierce and his Tea Party allies did last year. The facts are clear. It doesn't matter how many times you try to repackage that. The fact is Congressman Pierce votes 92% of the time with the Tea Party. When that shutdown occurred, he had an opportunity to choose between protecting southern New Mexico and helping our community or voting with his party. He chose to vote with his party as a matter of principle, hurting southern New Mexico.
Well, let's go to another question, and I think it dovetails with what the two of you have said. The partisan fight has all but deadlocked the Congress. It's done this for years when it comes to negotiating solutions to some of the most pressing problems the country has. How would you break this deadlock? Other than, neither one of you have said this, but a lot of people say, other than to say, do it my way. Congressman Pierce?
Thank you. Again, I would point out that the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, both recognized me as one who works with Democrats probably more than anyone. We've worked with Beto O'Rourke to craft immigration bills, and there's nothing that divides Republicans and Democrats more than immigration, and yet we're finding the common ground that we both believe we can help solve. Work with Congressman Swalwell out of Nancy Pelosi's hometown, San Francisco. We work with representative from Wisconsin on the Native American housing bill. In fact, when my Native American housing bill came before our committee, 14 of the 25 Democrats voted with it. So I think, first of all, we lead by example. But the second thing that's important to understand is that Washington really functions much the way the Americans want it to. Republicans want us to go this way. Democrats want us to go this way. When Americans want us to line up and get together like they did on the recent veterans issue, wanting to cure the problem, we solved that in 3 months, House, Senate, and White House.
So it sounds like maybe there isn't a deadlock. If everyone follows this, how would you break the deadlock that does exist in Congress?
Well, thank you, Sam. I actually have a record of bipartisan working to solve issues. As throughout my entire professional life and serving on the county commission, I worked with people of all parties to make sure that we tackled the things that were affecting our community. The beautiful thing about New Mexico was when we had an issue to be solved, we didn't walk into the room and say, who are the Democrats, who are the Republicans? We walked in, we rolled up our sleeves, we sat down at the table, and we got to work to solve the issue and fix the problem. That's the way we do it in southern New Mexico. We get up early, we stay up late, we work hard to make things happen, and we don't divide people. We come together. Washington could use some of that southern New Mexico value, and that's the kind of leadership that I'll bring, so that we're working in a bipartisan manner to address the big issues facing our country.
Another general question now, which dovetails with what you've been discussing. For years now, Congress and really the whole country has fought over fiscal policy. Spend less or more on social programs. Continue to cut or raise taxes, particularly on the wealthy. Shut down the government to make a point. Vote for or against raising the national debt so the country would pay its bills in order to make a point. It's a general question, but give us some idea of where you stand on this fight over taxation and spending, Congressman.
The first thing I would assure people is that I think that you will handle your money better than that Washington will. I always am committed to returning as much money to you from your paycheck as we can, so I'm generally opposed to tax increases. But having said that, the president commissioned a study to find out which works, spending cuts or tax cuts, or tax increases. Looking at those results, when nations have gotten themselves into the fix that we are, the nations that try to solve it totally with tax increases have failed universally. This is looking at it historically. Those who attack it simply from a spending universally succeed. So that tells us if it works in other nations, we must be aware of what will work and what will not work here. Having said that, I will tell you that one of the most important discussions is, should we stand by while a nation, while the leaders in Washington carry us down fiscal paths that will wreck our economy? I didn't go to Washington to be silent. I voted against my leadership when they're wrong. I voted against Democrat leadership when they're wrong, and I will continue to do that.
Ms. Laura, taxation and spending.
Absolutely. We clearly have a problem in this country. We need to balance the budget. We need to pay down our deficit. And I support a balanced budget amendment that protects Medicare and Social Security and cuts tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. We can balance the budget. I believe that strongly. But I will not support doing it on the backs of the middle class and our seniors like Congressman Pierce has. We can also pay down the deficit. Congressman Pierce voted for a budget that would end Medicare as we know it and require seniors to pay thousands more in out-of-pocket costs, cutting education funding from Head Start to Pell Grants and strapping our students of any opportunities that they can have to grow and succeed, taking out that fair playing ground. Why did he do all that? All to pay for tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires like himself.
Rebuttal of 30 seconds, Mr. Pierce.
Sure. My opponent and her supporters are careful to say that the Republicans voted for things that would end Medicare as we know it.
Okay.
What she never says is that the Democrats, it's the Affordable Care Act that took $700 billion from the seniors. It took it out of Medicare in order to pay for others. If she would talk about the actual outcomes instead of the votes, I would have a lot more regard for the position. But as it is, I simply say that those language, that those words are simply more political talk.
30-second rebuttal.
Congressman Pierce is attacking me on supporting Medicare savings out of the Affordable Care Act, but the facts are clear. Congressman Pierce, you're attacking me for a vote that you took. Those same Medicare savings were in the Ryan budget that you supported and without any other safety net for our communities. Those cuts were in addition to those education cuts, cutting all of those students out of Head Start and Pell Grant, again, only to pay for tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. Wrong priorities for Southern New Mexico.
Mr. Pierce, is it true? Did you vote the way that Ms. Laura has described it?
The only cuts to Medicare have come from the Democrats, from Mr. Obama, Ms. Pelosi, and Mr. Reid. That's the way that the Affordable Care Act was structured, to take money from Medicare. She says that she supports it unilaterally. So I think that at some point we have to deal with what is actually occurring in Washington.
Ms. Laura, you say that you want to cut some money for the private Medicare programs. Is that correct? The Medicare Advantage programs.
Sam, first of all, I'd like to address the fact that Congressman Pierce just misstated something. He said that I support the Affordable Care Act unilaterally. What we need to do with the Affordable Care Act is fix some of the problems. There are problems with the Affordable Care Act, and we need to tackle those individually. I do not support a total repeal of it because that's throwing the baby out with the bathwater. So I want to make my position on the Affordable Care Act very clear.
Right, but did you vote, or do you support, rather, private insurers not having the ability to provide Medicare Advantage programs to the extent that they do now?
I support the Medicare savings that are in the Affordable Care Act, and I support those because of all of the other programs that the Affordable Care Act takes care of and helps all of our Southern New Mexicans. I would not ever vote to turn Medicare into a voucher system and create a situation where seniors would have to pay thousands out of pocket for prescription health care costs.
Excuse me, I fumbled the question somewhat, but is it yes or no? That is, with cuts to private insurers who provide Medicare Advantage programs. Do you support that?
I support the Medicare savings that are in the Affordable Care Act, Sam.
All right. Congressman Pierce, do you want to repeal the Affordable Care Act?
The Affordable Care Act was promised to the American people that you can hold your insurance. You can keep your doctor. We find out that that promise that you can keep your insurance is absolutely untrue. Also, I have employers in the Second District of New Mexico who tell me that they have to lay off employees to get below caps. So it is costing us jobs in Southern New Mexico. I have single moms saying that their costs have gone up so high they can't afford it. I voted multiple times to repeal the act. I think we should replace it, keep the good parts from it, but we should not leave it in place because it is damaging the American economy.
One of the complaints often leveled against some Republicans is that you oppose the act for reasons you've stated, but you don't have in place an alternative. Do you have an alternative?
The alternative is suggested by a doctor from Tennessee, a congressman from Tennessee. I will agree that, and it was one of my complaints about our leadership, that they were late coming to the table. That's something I think is a credible argument. For myself, I think there are pieces of the Affordable Care Act that we should use. Pre-existing conditions, prenatal conditions. I think that that health savings accounts would be good to put in there, something that would stop trial lawyers from having a field day suing doctors with frivolous lawsuits. A lot of things that we could do to improve the medical system here, but turning it over to the federal government has been a mistake.
A final word on this subject, Ms. Laura.
Absolutely. Congressman Pierce talks now that he supports parts of the Affordable Care Act and that he wants to change parts of it. His votes have been continuously to repeal the entire thing. If, in fact, what he is saying now is his position moving forward, then it seems like we might agree on something because I recognize that there are problems. One of the fixes I think we need to look at is the small businesses that are allowed to take credits if they have employees up to 25. We should expand that and allow employers who have up to 50 employees take credits. So there are pieces we need to fix. It's just a matter of rolling up our sleeves and doing it. A
couple of local questions now for this district in particular. Congressman, the president, as you know, has now, by executive authority, created the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks National Monument, I think a much larger area than you were for when it came before Congress. The question is, do you support the idea of federal funding for this monument?
I think that what the president did was vastly overreach. He removed the issue from a way that people here could have a voice. Now, this bill actually came up 6 or 7 years ago. We began to push back immediately saying, I'm for protecting the Oregons. We put a bill in that would have a small footprint. But for him to take it out of the public sphere removes the voice of the people. That bill did not pass under Republican control of the Senate. It did not pass when Jeff Bingaman tried to pass it with Democrat control of the Senate. With Harry Reid having a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate, they still couldn't get it through because local people opposed it. So the president went far too far in making this monument. The people would have supported a small footprint. I have asked the speaker to intervene, to stand up. He has used this example nationally that we should not let this stand unchallenged. Whether it is a defunding of pieces of it or trying to go back and rewrite it, I'm open to adjusting what the president has done unilaterally.
But my question about would you support additional funding? You've explained then that maybe not.
If it depends on the way that the funding is laid out. I will tell you, until you see an appropriation bill, you don't know how it's going to be described. We have monuments right here that have no one going to see them. They don't have any facility there for people to check in. And so if we are going to continue to declare monuments just for the sake of removing grounds from public spheres, I would look at anything that we need to do to keep the people to where they can have a say in what the land is used for.
Ms. Laura, your turn.
Absolutely. So the question about the federal funding, I do support federal funding for our national monument here, and at what level that funding should be requires many, many hours of discussion, I believe. But I want to address the issue that the president's action in declaring that a monument was because of the public voice. In the county of Doña Ana, we've had so many stakeholders at the table working hard on this issue for over a decade. We've had conservationists, we've had hunters, we've had businessmen, we've had all kinds of folks coming together, having those discussions, and creating a plan. The president then took that public voice and designated this national monument with an overwhelming approval of the citizens of Doña Ana County. And I believe that anytime you're doing anything on a federal policy level, you have to take into account the local stakeholders and their voice about how it's going to affect their community.
Ms. Laura, the congressman says that at least on the point of the size of the monument, the president overreached some 500,000 acres. I mean, you think that size is about right?
I think the size is about right, and it was supported by the citizens of Doña Ana County, the local stakeholders who are directly impacted by the national monument.
Let's go on to the spaceport now. It's the 10th anniversary just this week of the announcement that we're going to have a spaceport in New Mexico. Would you pursue and approve of federal funding, Congressman, for the spaceport?
I've been one of the strongest supporters of the federal spaceport since its inception, worked closely with the XPRIZE as they begin to chart that first aircraft up in the first spaceship. Absolutely would support the federal funding for the programs that have a federal intent. The idea behind the spaceport is that we're going to use private funds, private investment. There have been statewide funds, some federal funds that have gone to the facility. But a lot of it is going to come from private investors. Right now, a recent $100 million contract was inked with one of the facilities here in this town. I think that there is that this looks to the assets of New Mexico are open skies. The White Sands Missile Range, which keeps all commercial traffic from flowing through that area. So it's going to be safer here than anywhere else. But absolutely believe that the high-tech future of New Mexico rests on ideas like this. Have been glad to support it.
Ms. Laura, federal funding for the spaceport?
Yes, if the spaceport gets together and has a good, solid plan. I think the biggest thing missing right now from the spaceport is a really great plan into the future of what the citizens of New Mexico can expect. And the citizens need to be a part of that. The spaceport was a tremendous idea. It's a wonderful facility. It's got fantastic potential for space tourism and showing the leader in technology that New Mexico is. But we're hurting right now. We're hurting with not enough staffing, not a great plan, and we need to have that established and work forward. Now, in Congress, what I would do is work very closely with our state elected officials, with the local communities, and join this collaborative effort to make sure we've got a good plan that's going forward, and the federal funding can be a part and a piece of that.
All right, another general question now of, I think, very major importance for the country. The United States and many other nations are mobilizing to stop the murderous rampage of the Muslim fighters in the Mideast. We're trying to establish an Islamic state of Iraq and Syria, ISIS. The Obama administration insists that no U.S. ground troops will be used in this fight. But the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Dempsey, says it might be necessary. And the Speaker of the House, John Boehner, says he thinks it will be necessary. So the question is, if the president asks for it, Ms. Lara, will you vote to authorize the use of ground troops in this fight?
I think absolutely. I support targeted airstrikes that are happening now. And I would be looking for what's happening at the time that the president comes to Congress and asks for that authorization to move forward with ground troops. General Dempsey gives the answer that is a might. We might need to do it. And I think as we continue with each day forward, there's going to be more information that's available to support a good decision. And we need to be looking at what those experts are saying. Like many southern New Mexicans, and what I hear as I'm traveling around the district, I'm very wary of sending ground troops to that area. We need to be looking at our international coalitions and collaborations and see what information is presented at the time that we are taking that vote in Congress. That's the most important thing. The cost of the war in Iraq has been so great with lives and funding. We have to be careful when we're making these decisions.
If the president decides that he wants to do that, do you believe he is obligated, either legally or constitutionally, to come to Congress and get permission from Congress?
Yes, absolutely. The president should come to Congress and get permission for that.
Congressman Pierce, where do you stand on the possibility of using ground troops in this fight?
The ISIS threat is one that is extreme. I think that the president was slow to get to the game. He described them early on as a junior varsity threat, I think. He has missed a lot of his security briefings. What I would do is listen to the generals. I've said that repeatedly since getting to Congress. I was in Vietnam at a time when politicians began to run the war. I have a hard feeling for the position they left us as young soldiers in there in Vietnam. Do not want to put others into that position. So if the president comes to ask for that permission, then I will try to evaluate whether or not he's listening to the generals, whether or not he's going to let our troops fight to win, and whether or not he has the heart to finish the process. I will tell you, he's pulling out of Afghanistan about the way he pulled out of Iraq. Our generals said they are not ready to be alone. They can do the fighting, but they can't do the logistics and the planning. And for him to unilaterally pull out of Iraq without a stabilizing American presence there was a big mistake, and we're paying the penalty for it. So I would analyze his intent before I gave him approval to use more U.S. lives over in that theater.
The congressman makes it clear that he would rely to a large extent, not universally necessary, on the generals and their view. What about your analysis if the president comes to Congress?
Yes, and that's exactly the point I was making about General Dempsey and his position right now. We need to rely on those experts who are the generals and the military personnel that are involved and right there on the ground with these issues. They are the ones that we can take the most information from, the best information from, and make a good decision before subjecting our American troops to further battle.
We're about halfway through the debate, and now we come to this terribly unfair, dreaded 10-second questions. How do you answer anything of real importance in 10 seconds? Make a try at it. First question, Congressman, do you believe new federal gun control laws are needed?
I do not, Sam. The gun control laws that we have in place would have prevented any of the atrocities that have occurred. I do not think we need more gun control laws.
Ms. Lara.
Sam, I think we need to close the loopholes that are allowing guns to get into the hands of criminals and the mentally ill. And we cannot have a discussion about guns without talking about the access to behavioral health services in this country.
What about closing loopholes like the one she mentioned?
Well, I hear that a lot, but when we take a look, most of the loopholes have already been closed. It's not like you can go to gun shows and just anyone can get them. Background checks are required to a great extent. Again, I just don't think we need new laws right now. Let's just start enforcing the ones that we have.
Last short word on this subject.
Absolutely. We've got to be looking at the access to behavioral health services because we are at a shortfall in this country for getting people the help that they need for mental health and behavioral health services. And that is the biggest issue I've seen come out of the gun tragedies we've had lately.
10 seconds to begin with you, Ms. Laura. Do you support the decriminalization of marijuana for recreational use? It's now legal for medical use here in New Mexico.
Sam, at this point in time, there's a few states that have decriminalized marijuana for recreational use, and I'm taking a wait-and-see approach on that. I want to see the impact it has to the economies, the healthcare, and the criminal justice systems in those states before we know if it's a good decision for the rest of the country.
Marijuana, Mr. Pierce.
Sam, I grew up in the 60s and 70s. It was during those times when the illegal drugs first made their way into our high schools and to our universities. Looking in the rearview mirror of life, seeing those kids who said, "Why, it's just recreational, it's just this," and understanding the wasted lives, the lost opportunities, the families that went without parents who were away recreationally using drugs. I just don't see how I can send that message to parents. I would not vote to legalize.
All right, next question. Let's just keep going with these 10 seconds.
Sure.
Do you agree that gay marriage should be legal as it is now in New Mexico? Ms. Laura.
Absolutely, unequivocally. I support marriage equality, and I believe strongly that we should all be treated in an equal way no matter who we love. I could never imagine taking the joy of marriage away from somebody else after my family has celebrated decades and decades of anniversaries, and I've been married to my wonderful husband for almost 16 years now.
Congressman?
The same-sex marriage question often is approached by people saying that, well, it's only fair. I would tell you that the untold part of that is that we can't just have two systems that parallel each other. It's not going to be that we declare same-sex marriage and traditional marriage okay. If same-sex marriages are implemented, then you're going to have people who are sued, who are attacked for their beliefs, who are told you can't teach that in the public square, who say that your churches can't even teach it, because the government will be required to come in and correct those people with a wrong viewpoint. It's not that they can coexist. We've already seen here in New Mexico a lady that was just saying, "I don't want to make the videos of your marriage. Go to somewhere else." The judge said, "You don't have the right to be in business and do that." That's what we're facing. I do not think, even though I think that the government should never tell people how to live their life, I do not think we should let this issue redefine marriage. And that's what the question is. Should we let it redefine what marriage is? And I do not think so.
Ms. Laura, the congressman said lots of legal issues here. You're a lawyer.
That's right. And you know, Sam, I don't know this distinction between traditional marriage and same-sex marriage. It's all marriage. It's two people who love each other, are in a committed relationship, and want to be together. These are creating issues to stand behind his position that he's taken all these years against same-sex couples getting married. The country is moving forward, believing that same-sex marriage is not okay, is a backward thinking. We've got to continue to move forward. The train has left the station, and this is marriage for all.
See what I mean, folks? How unfair to ask for 10-second answers to basic questions that Americans have debated for years and are debating today in their living rooms. Let's move now to some of the big questions. Although he's not on the ballot, many people believe all the polls would show that President Obama is on the ballot, in one sense, in this coming election. In fact, he said about 10 days ago that his policies are on the ballot. In which one of his former political advisors, David Axelrod, said, "I don't think he should have said that." Not because Mr. Axelrod disagrees with the president's policies, but it's politics we're going to talk now, as well as policy. Most Republicans, and you'll speak for yourself as a Republican, oppose the president on many, many issues. But now many Democrats, supporters of his, are coming out and opposing him. Leon Panetta, who served as his CIA director, who served as his Secretary of Defense, longtime Democratic member of Congress and one of Bill Clinton's chiefs of staff, said publicly the other day that the president had lost his way when it came to Iraq and had created somehow a breeding ground for ISIS. Strong words. Ms. Laura, you're the Democrat, and I've got to begin with you. Are you running away from this president because he might cost you votes?
No, I'm not running away from this president in this election. I am working hard to make sure that Southern New Mexico's values are protected. That's why I'm running for Congress. There are some things that I disagree with the president on. There are some things I agree with him on. But it makes no matter. The point is the divisiveness, the dysfunction, and the partisanship in Congress and the way that it is broken is what's hurting Southern New Mexico. So I am running on my record of getting things done, working across the aisle, and standing up for people in our communities, standing up for the middle class, standing up for seniors, standing up for our veterans, and standing up for our children. Because I don't think that all hope is lost. I believe we can fix Congress together, and I believe that we can bring New Mexico out of the bottom of those rankings.
Do you think in general, without specific issues here or specific issues there, do you think in general the president has been a pretty good leader?
You know, again, there's some things I disagree with him on, and there's some things that I agree with him on. So it's hard to describe exactly what kind of leader I think he's been. I think he's made some bad decisions that have hurt Southern New Mexico, and I think he's done some good things that will help Southern New Mexico. That is my focus. What are we doing with every issue, and how is it going to impact the families in our district?
Congressman Pierce, in your opening statement, you mentioned that you had written the president a letter complimenting him on a specific thing that he had done. But surely, if I read your website correctly, that does not represent your overall view of his leadership.
Jimmy Carter said that he's made huge mistakes. Dianne Feinstein, the senator from California, said that he didn't have the right to turn the terrorists loose. Our generals are saying that he's not prosecuting the military strategy correctly. He's not showing up at his daily briefings. I can work with people who I don't agree with. That's pretty easy. I show that in Congress. We work on that here in the district. But what I can't understand is that this president promised that he was going to unite us, that he was going to bring us together. And this country desperately needs that. We were looking for his vision. We were looking for his leadership. And he did not come through. And in fact, many times he's been more divisive. He's been a standalone guy saying to Congress, as if he can dismiss us with a wave of the hand, I have a pen. And I have a phone, and I will use the pen if you don't use the phone. I'm sorry, but the process of America wanted checks and balances, and for him to unilaterally go around those checks and balances, it eats away at the very heart of the republic. That's where I think his real failings are.
Well, if you think he's not been a pretty good leader, why is that? When I listen to talk radio, some of the programs, I hear some of those people talk about him as not a good American, and some of them even claim he's not an American.
Sam, I can't look inside his heart. You just have to accept what is there. I don't know why he has missed those briefings. I do not know why he decided to pull out of Iraq. I went to Iraq 3 or 4 times last year. We were in Afghanistan, Iraq, and the leaders were saying, please, we need to be here as a stiff backbone. They will fight the front lines. Why the president did these things, I do not know. For the divisive things, I feel like that has political undertones to that. I mean, I can see it every day. He says on TV, we're talking to John Boehner. John Boehner comes in and says, the president hasn't called me in about a week and a half or 2 weeks. We're not talking about this issue. So it appears to have political undertones. The rest I can't address.
May I press you on this point? Because I was listening to a talk show host named Michael Savage the other day who believes the president has done some of this thing on purpose to destroy this country, Mr. Savage said. Do you believe that?
I can't believe that anyone would be in public office and purposely set out to damage the country. But really, intent has very little to do with it. The greater thing is, what has he done? I will tell you, the quantitative easing policies that he put into place are killing the poor. It is a war on the poor because it's driving up inflation. People in Wall Street, they don't care what the price of groceries are. The people here making $31,000 a year,
they care about
these policies.
I've asked you, and I'm coming back to you, Ms. Laura. But what is your view of whether it is a good thing for the country when public voices speak out in the way I've just characterized one who said the president has done all of this on purpose to injure
the
country.
Well, I mean, I heard people say about President Bush that he was a traitor, that he set up 9/11. I've heard these voices. Our founding fathers did not want a muzzle on the people. They gave us freedom of speech. That freedom of speech comes with responsibility, but if we do not exercise that responsibility, I'm worried about a government that would come in and say, you do not have the right to say anything. So I disagree with people who ran President Bush down. I don't agree with the people who are running this president down, saying he's here trying to purposely destroy the country. Yeah. But they have the freedom of speech, and if we're not willing to stop that, and I am not, then we're going to have to listen to them.
Ms. Laura, take what time you require, because I prolonged this with the congressman.
Well, first of all, I again find it interesting that Congressman Pierce continues to talk about divisiveness, because that's exactly what the American people are fed up with Congress about, is that divisiveness, the dysfunction, and the partisanship, and how it's hurting our families. He used the term earlier that there was a war on the poor. Well, he's part of the battle that's creating that war on the poor. When he voted for that Ryan budget, ending Medicare as we know it and costing seniors up to thousands in out-of-pocket costs, when he voted to cut Head Start funding so that 170,000 students could not have access to Head Start and early childhood education, when he voted to cut Pell Grant funding, which would hurt the low-income families in southern New Mexico who are trying to get a higher education, those are the things that are the war on the poor. He voted for all of those to pay for tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires like himself. Those are the wrong priorities, and it's part of that same partisanship, dysfunction, and divisiveness that's happening in Congress. We need to get rid of that.
A short rebuttal, Congressman.
Again, I would point out that my opponent is saying that we did these things. Those votes were not actions. The actions taken by the president that keep people from getting loans because of a Dodd-Frank regulation that was passed by Democrat House, Democrat Senate. Those are starving community banks out, and local people can't borrow money for trailer houses, for modular homes, anything. That's the real war on the poor. The inflation caused by the quantitative easing, the printing of money, that's the real war on the poor. Those are actual things that are occurring. Those are not supposed votes, right. They're not hypotheticals, they're real.
All right, sir, but do you dispute her recitation of the votes as she listed them?
I dispute the fact that there has been nothing that we have done that has cut those things. The votes were votes for a budget that is a blueprint. The actual cuts that are going on are the real important thing to the American people, and that's coming from her party right now.
Final rebuttal on this subject and move on.
Absolutely. Congressman Pierce is attacking the Democratic Party, and Congressman Pierce is attacking President Obama. This race is not between Congressman Pierce and President Obama. This race is between Congressman Pierce and myself, and it's about who has the priorities and the interest to work hard for Southern New Mexico families, to address the issues that are affecting us right here every single day on the ground, and who's going to cut through that dysfunction in Washington to make things happen.
Another big subject of interest, of course, to this part of the country as well as the whole country, immigration reform per se or not. Congressman, do you favor reform of the nation's immigration laws to allow some, and perhaps most, of the people who are here now illegally to remain in the United States?
Immigration is one of the most important parts to us. As I was growing up, about 10 years old, Mom would take us down to the field behind ours, and the Pierces, Mom, and the three oldest boys would join the Roscones and the Braceros who were working through the fields, and I grew to love people who would do anything to feed their families because I worked with them from a very early age. I believe in immigration, and I believe what it brings to this country. Where my opponent and I disagree is on the idea of amnesty or the pathway. I do not think that is the way that we should be addressing the problem. Yes, I have addressed it since I first got to Congress. I told Speaker Hastert that we need to solve this problem. I was on a working team that was trying to get the two far sides together. I visit with Congressman Gutierrez today, who's one of the leading elements on the left, so I still believe that we should be reforming it. But amnesty should not be the solution. I would support a guest worker program where Americans are offered the jobs first, no Americans take it, then people can come in and they can work here, but they would not receive benefits while they're here working.
Ms. Laura.
Sam, this country desperately needs immigration reform, and I support a bipartisan, comprehensive immigration reform bill to take care of that problem. We have over 11 million people in this country that are undocumented, and they're in our communities, and they're working and participating in our communities. We need to find a way to bring those folks out of the shadows and make them taxpaying, productive citizens of America. So I support comprehensive immigration reform that does several things, that invest in increased investments in border security, that cracks down on the employers that are not playing by the rules, that reforms our immigration system as a whole, and that provides a pathway to citizenship. Now, this pathway to citizenship is not a free pass. It would require the immigrants to get in the back of the line, to learn English, to pay back taxes, and most importantly, to pass those background checks before they can become citizens.
Well, now, how could you do that without employing the word that the congressman has used, amnesty? I don't have Webster's in front of me, but amnesty suggests a forgiveness of an illegal act with no other part of the forgiveness.
Sure.
How would you do it?
Sure, and that's a mischaracterization of what I support. What I support is a tough but fair pathway to citizenship. It's not a free pass. It has several hoops, and those hoops I just stated, but they're to pass background checks, to pay back taxes, get in the back of the line, and to learn English so they can become productive taxpaying citizens of America. Just passing comprehensive immigration reform alone will bring almost $1 trillion to our economy over two decades.
Congressman, when you say amnesty, what does that word mean to you? Does it mean that they should all go back to their countries and get in the back of the line of normal immigration?
I think, Sam, with regard to any policy, the challenge that we have is to find what's fair to all concerned. I cannot understand a pathway or amnesty, because to me they're just synonymous, but I can't understand the fairness to the people who stay in their countries and come here legally. We do about as many immigration cases as anyone nationwide, I suspect, because of our location close to the border. We see that it takes up to 20 years. If people could come here and learn English and pay a few back taxes, well, of course they would do it, but we would have no process. We must have an orderly process by which people come to this country, become citizens, and that's what I propose. The pathway says come here any way you want to and learn English and pay those taxes, and we may give you a little fine, but we're going to make you a citizen. That's going to tell everybody exactly what was happening in July. The people will come flooding here. The Border Patrol says we're completely out of resources. We can't stop the flood. There has to be a process. The process must be clear. And saying you can come here and we'll take care of you is not going to be the solution.
All right. What would you do with the 11 million some odd people who are here illegally? Tell us exactly what should happen to them.
First of all, I would secure the border. Secondly, I would reform legal immigration. I think we should be able to tell somebody within 3 months or 6 months or a year, could you come here legally or not? I think most people would live with that. Now then you have a static problem. The people who say that we need a pathway have a dynamic problem. It's the same tomorrow as it is today. So what I would do is solve the first two, secure the border without new flows. It would then fix legal immigration. I would ask a simple question. Do you want to be a citizen or not? If you do, there is a process, and you have to go through the process. If you only want to work and feed for your family, that's something I care about. Let's get you on a work permit, and we'll give you biometric identifiers. We can hold employers accountable at that point. And so just let the people make the choice. I will tell you, most people tell me they would choose to stay here and work. They say they don't come to be a citizen.
So to make certain I understand, I'm pretty slow on these things. If they wanted to be a citizen, then they should go back and go through the process.
Yes,
get in line in their own home country. If they don't want to be a citizen, we deport them? I mean, the rest of the 11 million people, what happens to them?
No, you give them a guest worker program. I wouldn't even send them back to their country. You simply say, get on a guest worker program. When you have a job, you're welcome to be here. We're going to offer that job to Americans first. But if Americans don't take it, we'll give you the job. But when you don't have a job, you need to be back in your country. If we let people come and go with ease, I will tell you, most people who are here illegally, and I talk to people, they say, I would leave my family. I want my kids to go to school where I did. But we make it so difficult to go back and forth that they end up bringing their wife, and then they get their kids, and then we deport the husband. If we had just a simple process to go back and forth, I think we wouldn't have many of the problems.
Ms. Laura?
Yeah, well, you know, we have to develop this pathway to citizenship as part of an overall bipartisan comprehensive immigration reform. It passed the Senate. The Senate bill for bipartisan comprehensive immigration reform passed overwhelmingly, and both sides of the aisle came together. Some gave some walked away with things they didn't want, but it passed, and that's a unique example to what's happening in Congress right now. I believe that if the House brought that same bill up for a vote, that it would pass. And I'm not sure who Congressman Pierce is talking to around the district, because most of the immigrants that I speak to want citizenship, and they want citizenship for their families. They want their children to have the opportunities that the children in America have, and they want to become productive citizens and not live in the shadows anymore. This is a huge policy problem across the country. We need to fix it.
But the congressman says if they want that, they should get it if they can by going back and going through the process as other people do.
Which is why reforming the legal immigration system is a part of bipartisan comprehensive immigration reform. You can't do this in a piecemeal section. You have to tackle the issue and deal with all of the parts and pieces, or else we're just going to end up with more problems later on.
I think we have time for one more big question and maybe a few small questions, but the big one is over climate change. Now, that's a fact. The climate is warming. The question becomes, to what extent do you believe human activity is contributing, perhaps dangerously, to the warming of the climate? And if you believe that, that it is contributing to it, what do we do about it? Congressman Pierce.
I Googled this issue a couple of days ago. See that there are 31,000 scientists who say that human action is not causing the global warming at all. And in fact, the last 17 years, there has not been global warming. The temperature has been very stable for the last 17 years. I think all of us heard the idea from Al Gore that the polar ice caps are going to disappear by 2010. Well, that was 4 years ago. They haven't disappeared. We heard the people who said Arctica's in a death spiral. It's not. I was just there this past year. The ice cap is there. In fact, the last 3 years, it's increased by 50%. I will tell you that the people who pretend that they want to tax the American people based on the idea of global warming, climate change, whatever, it's the tax that they're after. I do not see any reason to tax the American people more to pay for this so that money can be redistributed, which is what the real intent of the whole issue is.
Ms. Laura, do you believe human activity has contributed to global warming?
Yes, I do believe that human activity has contributed to global warming. And like you said, Sam, it's a fact that it exists and it's happening. I applaud Congressman Pierce's efforts to Google the issue, but I don't take all of my information from the internet. I rely on science and scientists and expert opinion as to what's happening around this world. We need to be looking for good investments and plans and very strategic, targeted planning for our future. We're very lucky to live in southern New Mexico. This is the energy district of the United States. We have oil and gas, we have biofuels, we have geothermal, and we have wind, and we have solar energy and power. We have great universities and colleges, and we can be at the forefront of technology. Just as New Mexico is a leader in oil and gas, we can be a leader in renewable sources as well. I support an all of the above energy plan and looking for ways to make these things happen.
A rebuttal, Congressman?
Sure. New Mexico can be a leader in each one of the alternative energies. That's not the question. The question is, would we levy a big new tax on the American people in order to pay for what some people are saying is occurring? It's interesting to hear my opponents say that we should trust the science. It's actually the scientists themselves. The IPCC, the International Panel for Climate Change, they're the ones whose email said, "Oh, we threw that science out because our models wouldn't work if we put those if we put that temperature in. Oh, and that event over here, we left that out because obviously our models quit working." The models don't work 95% of the time. That's by a NASA scientist. And so the idea that science is being involved in this, I think that maybe she should look closer.
Ms. Laura, the congressman says, I think 31,000, if that's the number, sir, that you have mentioned.
It is.
Scientists disagree with human activity. But who are the people then who are leading the fight?
leading the fight
on your side.
for climate change and global warming.
Yeah, on your
well,
side.
You know, you just have to walk outside and you can feel and see the effects of it with the heat, the temperatures that are rising, and you see these things happening on the ground. I think the most important thing here is that we have to build a future with some plans so that we don't lose control inside of what's happening with our environment here.
It's time now for the closing statements, and because of the draw of the straw, Ms. Laura, you're going first.
Thank you, Sam. Thank you, KRWG, Sam, and Congressman Pierce for a very spirited debate today. A year ago, we were in the midst of a reckless government shutdown, and it was a stark reminder of how the dysfunction and partisanship in Washington impacts us right here in southern New Mexico. We need a Congress that will do its job and move our country and southern New Mexico forward. We need to take our values to Washington and make sure that we balance the budget, make sure that we protect Medicare and Social Security, make sure we pass comprehensive immigration reform, and make sure that we are investing in small businesses right here in southern New Mexico so we can grow and create jobs. Now, I know I'm just one person, and I can't change Congress all by myself, but together and with your help, we can make sure that southern New Mexico finally gets a voice in Washington. Thank you. I appreciate your vote and your support. Muchas gracias.
Mr. Pierce.
Thank you, Sam. I appreciate this lively debate, and thanks to my opponent, Roxanne Laura. I want to say a special thanks to my wife, Cynthia. She's the light and the laughter and the joy of my life and has been for the 30-plus years that we've been married. We raised our children here in New Mexico. We have lived here our own lives, built our business here. I have a love for the New Mexican people and ask for your vote tonight. I really appreciate the opportunity to serve in the past. The future of this country is going to be determined by us the people. Not us the people saying that we're Republicans or Democrats, but us the people coming together on shared ideas, the idea that liberty should apply to all, that we will fight for liberty for people in other countries, the idea of fairness, that all laws would be fair, that we would treat everyone equally under the law, the idea of caring if someone slips through the cracks of life, that we're there with our safety net. Those are the values. I am asking for the ability and the right to go back and fight for you one more time to fight for jobs in southern New Mexico. Again, thank you and God bless you.
Well, thank you, Congressman Pierce, and thank you, Ms. Laura, for joining in this debate. I think people appreciate politicians who will debate, whether they're ahead or behind, and I think you deserve a gold star, both of you, for doing that. Thank you for joining us for this election 2014 debate. Thanks to the candidates who've been with us tonight, as I've said, and I'm Sam Donaldson. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us and for supporting public media in New Mexico. Good evening.
Thanks for joining us tonight for the congressional debate hosted by KRWG in Las Cruces between Steve Pierce, the Republican incumbent, and Democrat Roxanne Rocky Lara, an attorney. The final congressional debate between District 3 incumbent Democrat Ben Ray Lujan and his Republican challenger Jeff Byrd will be on Thursday, October 30th at 7 p.m. right here on 89.9 KUNM. Find more of our election 2014 coverage online at KUNM.org. For KUNM, I'm Chris Boros.